And I have never seen anything even close to this in November and December. These weather patterns have changed dramatically. This rain is historic as far as the zoo is concerned.
Most all time in about a 30-county region in North Texas, stretching from Waco to the Red River.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. Her guest is Mike Elk, a labor journalist and third-generation union organizer based in Washington, D.C. He writes frequently for In These Times, Alternet, and The American Prospect.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Music, Nature, and Storytelling, an experiential weekend workshop from January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat and Conference Center in Vernonia, Oregon. Storytelling as a practice broadens our perspective and helps us understand the significance of our experiences. This workshop teaches the roots of storytelling and delves into the storyteller's mind. No prior experience required, and the deadline for registration is December 18th. Again, that's Music, Nature, and Storytelling, a weekend workshop January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, December 16th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. And Kathleen Stevens is engineering for us today. Today's guest is Mike Elk. He's a longtime writer. He has been writing for Politico, and we're going to find out where and why that the story there developed. His piece out of Texas on steelworkers, 450 steelworkers locked out in Texas is what he wrote, and I believe what got on Politico's nerves, something awful. We got a few headlines as well. Let's not forget that despite all of the glowing rhetoric coming out of Paris in the aftermath of nothing, the likes of the United Nations, the US, the EU, China, Norway, all the climate criminals lined up to sign up to a false solution to climate change. It's called RED, R-E-D-D, stands for Reducing Emissions from Deforestation and Degradation. Is that really what it does? Really? It's a carbon offset mechanism that privatizes the air we breathe. It uses forests, agriculture, and water ecosystems in the global south as sponges for industrialized nations. That's about all it does. It seems like not much as far as addressing climate change, but plenty as far as corporatizing all the world's natural resources, what's left of them. And there's a very important meeting coming up in Coquille, down the coast on the 18th. And if you need to get more information, if you're down that way and you possibly can attend, all the good talking points are listed. Everything you need to know to show up and comment and sound like you really know what you're talking about, which you probably do, or at least have strong feelings about preserving the Oregon coast, be there on the 18th in Coquille to raise your voice against this terminal proposed for Jordan Cove. And, of course, we have another there's a great story. Steve Horney's embarking on a multi-part series of articles on Exxon and how that company has bought and paid for academics to say whatever Exxon wants them to say. We could pretty much guess what that would be. 10 protesters arrested for disorderly conduct at Indian Point. We can't cover that. And the rise of ISIS or Daesh or Islamic State, it's not anything like Islamic, but nonetheless, is a direct consequence of the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq and other instances where the U.S. attempts to take down and notable who they accuse of being a tyrant. Well, it's pretty clear that the one person's tyrant is another person's secular head of state attempting to do what he or she can to stabilize a country that's constantly shattering and flying in different parts. And Democratic Senator Tim Kaine is renewing his push for Congress to debate and vote on the authorization for the use of military force. We still don't have Congress. Isn't Congress supposed to sign off on these adventures? Sure it is. But since Congress rarely does anything, others have gone ahead and stampeded to war with or without said authorization. And if indeed they debate and vote, then they will have to take a position on whether there should be. They haven't formulated a position on this either. Of course, net neutrality coming up very soon, and it's time to get back up to speed on it, because we and indeed again could lose net neutrality. And in the midst of all of this, we have this story. That is, yes, it's from Politico. It's from Mike Elk, who's been writing for Politico for a very long time. Joins us this morning to sort things out. We've really got a story within a story here. Good morning, Mike, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Great to be on the show. Always good to help support community radio.
Yeah, and we need you, your work and your support for unions is critical for workers all across the country. You're one of the few voices that has been raised out there in the name of workers in this country. So talk a little bit about Politico, your work with Politico, and where it stands now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's sort of interesting. You know, I never imagined I'd get hired at Politico. You know, I'd spent all my career at a nonprofit magazine called In These Times, based out of Chicago. And, you know, Politico was never something that was on my radar because, you know, it's a very inside the Beltway DC publication, Politico is. And what's interesting is, you know, I got called last summer. You know, I was laid off from my job and I was looking for other work, and, you know, I was doing some odd jobs to make some money, you know, doing landscape work. And I got a phone call, a cold call from Tim Noah at Politico, and that they were starting a labor desk and they really wanted me to come down there. And what had happened, and it was a funny instance, is that Politico, I don't think most people realize that there's the Politico everyone reads, and then there's the Politico for the 1%. That's called Politico Pro. And Politico Pro costs about $5,000 a year. And about 75% of Politico's content is directed towards Politico Pro. And that's a specialized service of news alerts and stories that only people that pay $5,000 a year can subscribe to. And so they wanted to start reporting on labor because there's a lot of anti-union lawyers that want to know what's happened. And there's a lot of anti-union groups that want to buy ads. So I figured, oh, you know, hey, this is going to be interesting. You've never worked in a newsroom like Politico, and they were offering me $70,000 a year as a labor reporter, which is great money. I mean, that's twice the national average. And I said, oh, you know, not exactly your fit, but you need a job, and it's a lot of money, and maybe you'll just be there 6 months to a year, and, you know, you'll be able to say, you know, I was really thinking, as somebody who had worked all my life in the nonprofit media, oh, wouldn't this be neat to get into the belly of the beast and see how the corporate media really works up close?
And on the other side, Lips, I love it. The idea of Mike Elt working for Politico Pro is so beautifully ludicrous. You definitely did get inside. Go ahead, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got paid very well. It was, you know, it was a funny situation because, you know, they never called any of my references. I think they were kind of looking for window dressing. Because a lot of what they were doing was kind of an anti-union slant a bit to it, I felt. You know,
a bit, considering the audience.
Well, I mean, what upset me, like, you know, you were talking about the West Coast. You know, you guys are out there in Portland. You have the West Coast port dispute. And we're sitting there, and they're quoting all these numbers from business groups all the time. And I'm saying, are we, like, fact-checking any of these numbers, or are these business groups just making these numbers up? You know, because they were claiming that the union was causing, you know, a huge amount of lost productivity. And I said, well, where are these numbers coming from? How do we know what these numbers even mean? You know?
Yeah.
Is there some outside, you know, we can't just use these numbers. And, you know, this was like, people down there said, well, that's not our responsibility. You know, these trade groups, you know, they have their methods. And if, you know, a group doesn't like their numbers, we'll run a retraction or something. And, you know, I just saw this all the time. I mean, the reporters there move so quick, and that's their business model, which is speed, which is that Politico knows first. And it's—I don't think people realize this about Politico. I mean, it's—I wouldn't say it necessarily has an ideology one way or the other. Although I would say that its leadership is definitely more to the right. It's that Politico really is kind of like the ESPN of politics. It's a stock ticker of what's happening, who's up, who's down. For people that are political professionals, lobbyists, PR people, people on Capitol Hill, everyone on Capitol Hill reads Politico Pro. And it's really designed to sort of be, you know, like, this is what's happening. This is who's winning. And Politico always says that their business model is their audience is people whose business is politics. And so what they take the analysis out of a story, and it's just like, this is how much money Trump is spending. And I would be in these meetings at Politico, and I would get these emails, and Susan Glasser, who was the editor of Politico, would say, oh, you know, the Trump bump, it's really real. And they would chase after these crazy Trump stories because of the ratings. And here it is, the man's a demagogue. He, you know, is getting a disproportionate amount of airtime compared to Bernie Sanders, despite having similar amounts of support. And, you know, you really start to see that the corporate media was really complicit in his rise in a way that I think is not good for society.
Well, none of this is particularly good for actual real people struggling to stay afloat in
I love that you use the term actual real people, because I think people in that newsroom, you know, you would have to differentiate, you know, like real people, and they'd be like, who's that? You know, I remember once saying about labor, because they didn't like quoting workers, and they said, Mike, we're not going to do man on the street reporting. And I said, we're covering labor. That is man on the street. I mean, that is the basis of labor.
It's a little hard to avoid. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I do want to get to your story that you wrote as Politico's labor reporter on the United Steelworkers chasing down Mark Rich. And now that he's gone, the steelworkers still are in the trenches again in Texas. Where else? Ivan Glasenberg locked out 450 steelworkers. How does that story that you wrote for Politico fit into all of this?
Well, what happened is, after a few months at Politico, I started raising objections about how they were tilting articles too much in the direction of a bunch of these trade groups, trade associations. And, Politico, I had only been there about 4 months, you know, Marty Caddy, the managing editor of Politico, called me in and was saying, hey, this isn't going to work out. You know, this isn't working out. You can't say these kind of things, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, a couple days later, I knew I was getting fired. It was just a matter of time. I said, oh, great, I want a union here. knowing, you know, one, that hardly anybody was at that time organizing in unions, but now everybody's organizing. And two,
so you, when you, are you there? Have you lost
it? And two, when you get involved in a union drive, it gives you additional legal protections. You know, a boss has to give you a warning about the quality of your work before they fire you.
So if you are, if you are about to be fired, you think, and you start organizing the labor in
your
labor,
you protect your job under the law.
Then you're okay. Okay, yeah, go ahead. We only have about a minute left, but I want to at least introduce this story and get people up, aware of what happened.
Yeah, and so what happened is they made me write all these stories, and one of these stories was about this lockout in Texas that got zero coverage, and it's still going on. You know, it's a really bloody bad lockout, and you know, it's been going on for 14 months, and we were going to run an article that was going to run both here and in Europe about Glencore, about the corporation doing it, and about their ties to right-wing paramilitaries in Colombia. And, you know, they could never explain why they wouldn't publish it for about a month. And finally, I started protesting and they just fired me.
And meanwhile, did you did get it published, though?
Yeah,
and so in the end, labor, the voice of labor, at least won out. There's a whole lot more going on here. It is complicated. We just barely talked about a few of the main points here, but I want to thank you so much for joining us today. My guest, of course, has been Mike Elk. He's a longtime labor activist and writer for a while at Politico Pro. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. You're listening to KVOO Portland. Let's see. Kathleen Stevenson is our engineer today. Kathleen Stevenson is also the KVOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.